Hey guys, welcome to another episode of Screw the Stigma. My name is Afra and thank you so much for tuning in this week. And before we get to this week's podcast, I just want to say that this particular episode was filmed a long time ago. To be exact, I think it was in January, the beginning of the year. So the quality is a little bit different than my usual podcast, as well as the format and my awkwardness is really high in this one. I also had very strong opinions about universities and just college courses in general, because I had my personal experience wasn't that great, but that doesn't mean that that's how it's going to be for you. Everything that my guest and I talked about, all of it is our personal opinions, so don't take anything to heart or be offended. It's just fun talk, basically. But do tune into this week's episode. Thank you so much for listening. You can follow me on Instagram at Screw the Stigma Podcast, where you can find updates as well as all new different content and educating, entertaining, and everything. As well as this episode is also available on YouTube, so go check that out. And all the information is listed in the description below. This week's guest is Dustin Miller from the Polymath Polycast, and we had a very fun conversation about polymath in general, what is being a polymath means, and everything about that. So it's an interesting episode. I had a great time talking to him. So yeah, without any more delays, I'm going to cut to that now. Hello, everyone. I have Dustin Miller, Poly Innovator, with me today. Hello, Dustin. How are you doing?
I'm good. You, Afra?
I'm doing great. How have you been? How's 2020 been? 2021 been?
Yeah, we're a new year now. Huh? It's crazy because I know. You know, it's funny. I actually feel like I've reset it a lot. And it's both a good thing and bad thing. Like, I've reset it mentally, but probably more importantly, as a content creator, I've reset it, actually. So at the middle of last year, close to around this time, actually, I switched my host for my podcast and basically moved all my episodes over to a new host, which was great because it distributed me better, but then it reset all of my audio search engine optimization, SEO. So basically, even though I had a whole year's worth of experience, like multiple years, it basically made me act as if I was a brand new show. And then at the end of last year, I built my new website and I consolidated 4 different blogs into one. And so now I have all 180 something blogs on there, blog posts, but I got a new website, the same address at least, but all different URLs and stuff like that. And so now I reset my written SEO as well. And so it's like everything's getting reset. And so even though I've been at the space for a while, it's like I'm starting over again.
Well, at least now you know exactly how things work, because I know that at the beginning, when you probably started, when you were fresh, it was probably a lot different. And now I know there's a lot better technology out there for people who are starting out now than when you were starting out. So how was that when you were starting this, when you're starting your Polymath Polycast and even creating?
So I started blogging towards the end of 2011, 2012, or beginning of 2012. And so that was basically 8 or 9 years ago. And that's great. Like, that was probably the 4th or 5th wave of blogging at that point. So I started late, technically speaking, because people started in the early 2000s even. But I think that I still was early enough, and I made a WordPress website, and I didn't like it, so I moved to Wix, then I moved to Medium, which I definitely didn't like, I moved back to WordPress, and then now I moved to Ghost. And so I've definitely seen, like you said, the rise of technology and different things going on. I even tried Substack. So I've tried many different content management systems. And then in like 2017, I started the United Living Construct podcast, which was my previous endeavor's audio cast, so to speak. And since it was basically the same content as I was making for Poly Innovator, what I started doing my Polycast, I just kind of folded it into the show. And so if you scroll down on the Polycast, you'll see those as well. But I started that in 2017, and about a year later, started doing videos on the Poly Innovator channel. And so I've just basically been doing, audio for about 4 years now, and video for about 3. And I wasn't super active the first time because I remember being so nervous to be on camera, or not knowing that I had to look at the camera when I'm talking to somebody, or stuff like that, or getting used to your own voice when you're hearing your podcast or polycast. That's always really hard. So it's been a challenge, but I think it's more and more I do it, the more and more I realize it's worth it.
I completely understand that, because I know for a fact that a lot of people who do want to start creating content, it is there's a lot out there. It's very super saturated, and everybody, I feel like now, compared to 2009, for example, you know, there's so much, everything is out there, you know, anything, for example, on YouTube, everything is out there. Anything you want to look up, any information, if you want to learn something, if you want to consume a certain kind of content, everything is out there. So the people who do want to start something right now, but they are overwhelmed by the concept of it, would you like to say something as the pro who's been out there for quite a long time?
Well, a lot of my advice will stem from others like Roberto Blake, Gary Vee, Sean Cannell. A lot of them talk about just make 100 videos, get the content going. Like, you really have to do quantity before quality comes. I was really obsessed with quality when I first started out. And when I look at my videos back then compared to now, I'm still not even the greatest, like, high production quality, but I try to make sure the actual content and information provided, or information I'm relaying at least, is all top tier as best I can. And so the actual production quality is only increased marginally, I guess you could say, but I still look back at my old videos and I'm like, wow, there's a lot that I've improved on that way. And so just by doing it enough, like, I have around 140 videos, 140 polycasts, 180 blog posts now. And just from the experience of pure quantity, the quality has improved. And that's one thing that a lot of people talk about. So you just really need to get started and don't feel overwhelmed by all the information, because you only need to know what medium you're starting with. If you want to do video, great, do video. If you want to do audio because you don't want to put yourself on camera, that's fine too. If you're a better writer, then do blogging. Find your medium and then stick to that. Do 100 of it and then you can branch out from there. And that's kind of counterintuitive to the polymathic idea, but it is a good way of getting started.
That sounds great because, like, you know, obviously, like, getting started, there's so many, even for social media people who tend to train other, you know, people who are coaches or they advise people on creating content. There's so many things that are, you know, different people are saying different things. You know, some people say that, oh, you know, you need to create at least every day, you need to create X amount of posts, otherwise you're not going to make it. Or, you know, they're going to say that, you know, your quality is the most important. If you're having bad quality, nobody's going to come out and check out your channel or even, you know, further watch your content. And I think one thing that I've learned is that, you know, definitely I create content for other companies. So one thing is that creating content is super hard, especially if you're a creative person, trying to perfect that is extremely difficult. And it's painful. And even with my podcast, it's been super difficult for me to release episodes because, you know, I've always looking for better ways to do things. And sometimes it's super stressful trying to be the best, you know, and trying to do the best. I feel like that can kill the creative vibe as well.
Yeah, you don't have to be the best. Yeah, I say you don't have to be the best because you really don't. You just have to have good content because at this point, we're hitting the like fourth wave, fifth wave of podcasting, and it's still fresh. Like, if you start now, you're still going to have some first mover advantage because just think about how it's going to be 10 years from now. And so it's one of those things where I was the exact same way, especially with my podcast interviews where I would cut out every and ah. And be perfectionist about it. And I tried actually hiring somebody, and I was kind of like hand-holding this professional who's better than me at editing. And I'm like, no, I don't need to do this. And like once I kind of let go of the reins a little bit, he was able to have the freedom to do it. And so that's the one thing too, even as a polymathic person, even if you know how to do everything really well, if you delegate, you have to make sure you give enough freedom to that. And so that's kind of the whole manager mentality. But I think also too, sometimes you just gotta let go. Like, I stopped really caring about the ums and ahs as much. I'll cut out any that are very, like, someone's pausing because of the or something like that. But if I'm talking this fast and I say and then keep talking, if you were to cut out that in that sentence there, it would cut off that whole sentence's flow. And so it would actually mess up the rhythm of the sentence and the whole overall quality even. So being a perfectionist can actually be detrimental to the quality too.
Yeah, so I completely understand what you're talking about. So you mentioned polymath, which a lot of people don't know what exactly the concept of polymath is. And even I didn't a couple of months ago. I just stumbled upon it. And I learned more thanks to you. But for the people listening, can you explain what the concept of polymath is?
Yeah, and so there's a few different kind of takes on it. But the main gist is the idea of someone who is deeply interested in many different areas. And when I say deeply, it could be master level, but it often just means like a deep level of knowledge in many different areas. So many learnings and many interests, so to speak. And so you're curious about everything. You can think of it almost kind of like Leonardo da Vinci, who was a literal, like, true polymath, or someone who's like a master of many different areas. But think of him but kind of like a lower level. That's what a lot of people are. And I think that's not a diss. That's just saying how amazing Leonardo was. Like, he's my hero. And so he's completely extreme because he dedicated every second of his life to his work. I think that polymathy is a bit more inclusive than that, and I think it's more of a spectrum. So you had this idea of like a jack of all trades. Well, people think of that word, jack of all trades, master of none, but it actually continues as jack of all trades, master of none, but oftentimes better than a master of one. And I bring this up because it relates to polymathy, because they're kind of the same meaning, someone who does many different things, but a polymath is further down the spectrum, someone with a deeper level of knowledge in a few different areas. And so you can almost think of it like a multi-specialist, if you will.
So is it people who train and specialize in different areas, or is it people who go and actively seek knowledge, like they go and they study both, like in university, or is it just like skills in a way?
It's both. I mean, you can be an academic polymath, but I feel like it's very difficult, especially since the academic world academic and professional worlds both squander polymaths, and that's something that's a stigma, if you will. And it's really interesting how it's only really been around since the second industrial revolution, where they had the whole 9-to-5 company kind of thing where everyone was cogs in the wheel. It was an assembly line, and that person had one job and needed one skill, and that's the only reason why the company wanted you, is to do that one job and that one skill, which is actually kind of against our natural being. Like, we're generalists by nature. We do a lot of different things. We have hobbies, we have interests, we have jobs, we have different ways we need to take care of our family, that kind of thing. We're more of a polymath than we are a specialist as a species. We do need specialists, like people who are doctors and know the aortic valve and the cardioid region of the heart. And it's just one of the things where there's a lot of need for specialists, but we're more generalists by nature. We have this natural, not unnatural, societal pressure to be a specialist, if that answers your question.
Yes. Like you mentioned, you know, I think society in specific, they make us just specialize in one thing and make us believe that we need to be good at one thing and that one thing only. And I know that for a fact that growing up in school, that's what they made us do in every way, shape, and form, you know. Like, even towards the end of going to university, you have to choose a field that you think that will be best suited for you. It's either science, business, or the arts. And I think from that point onwards, making a bunch of like 17 and 18 year olds choose what they want to do for, so quote unquote, rest of their lives.
Yeah.
For people listening, what did you do in school and what did you grow up doing or thinking that you wanted to do?
I feel like I'm a bit of an oddball, that even from a young age, I knew what I wanted to do or where I wanted to go at least. And it was a matter of how do I get there. And that's been the difficult part. But for most people, like you said, making a 17 year old decide what they're going to do for the rest of their life, it's putting insurmountable pressure on a kid who doesn't know what they're going to do with their world. And they say college is for experimenting, but that is a very expensive experiment. It's like, it's not worth the time and money to waste your time there. That's one reason why it's really good to take like a gap year and go test out jobs, go work for a company and go see what you want to do that way. For me, I've told this story before, but I love sharing it. When I was 8 or 9, I asked my mom and grandma for office supplies for my birthday because I wanted to be a businessman. And it's like, even as a kid, I had that mentality. And then when I was 10, I sold temporary tattoos. And so I had my own business and even having my own stand on a Earth Day festival downtown. And so I knew I wanted that business path, and all of my schooling that I did was high school, basically. I chose from a young age to take like keyboarding in 7th grade, because I was like, I knew that keyboarding was going to be helpful for me in the future. I was right, because obviously I'm typing to talk to you in the email, something like that. And then I would take Intro to Business, or Intro to Money Management, or Digital Media, or Web Design, and Graphic Design. I took all those classes specifically because I knew that they were going to help me with the overall career that I wanted in the future. I wanted to be a CEO as I got older, I'd say. And so for me, that's what I wanted to be, but I realized there was a lot of other things I wanted to do. And so I wanted to be able to work in music or video games or changing how we approach education. I didn't know I was going to do that, but for me, it became a very big passion of mine, and it's what started Poly Innovator in a way, but also creating content and actually sharing my knowledge about content has been a big thing too. all of my work life, I've been a fitness expert. So I have all these different areas in my life that I want to be able to incorporate. So PolyInnovator became a way for me to have a foundation for all the careers that I wanted to have in life.
Everybody, I feel like, needs that right now. And out of anything that hasn't changed, and I constantly tell people that it's crazy that the education system hasn't changed in like generations and years. Like the way that we were educated is the same as the way that, you know, generations before us was educated. And but the one thing that changes constantly is technology. You know, one thing that they maybe implement is like, you know, ways that they can improve the studying experience, but rather the whole system still stays the same. And I feel like that's ridiculous because everything is changing and science is evolving and the whole world is changing, but we all still study the same way. And, you know, the whole education system makes kids feel bad about not being good at, you know, popular fields like science, math, and they assume that, you know, if you're not good at that thing, then you never be good in life. How did you decide to go into polymath, like to diversify, to get yourself educated in different fields?
Well, for one, I would say when it comes to feeling like you're no good or not good in a particular subject, I was terrible with math in high school.
Same.
Like, I barely passed high school because I had a test out on math. Ironically, the 1 month we did calculus and algebra class, my grade shot up because it was more macro thinking, kind of big picture, and I was able to do it well. My grade shot up, and then we went back to algebra and it shot right back down. So to some of the more calculative stuff I was actually bad at. But I realized when as I got older, I personally identified as someone who is bad at math. And because of that, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. And so you got to get yourself out of that mentality too. Like, I know that I'm not good at math, but I know that I can be. And that distinction to make there too, I think is very important. When it comes to polymathy, it just kind of came natural for me. Like I said, like I knew I wanted to do a lot of different things. I think that for a lot of people, that's the same way. But sometimes people don't realize that. They don't actually realize they want to do many different things because they have that conditioning that I'm only good at one thing, or I should only be good at one thing. And so actually part of my show, the Polymath Podcast, I tried to exemplify the multidisciplinary traits in people so that even if the guest doesn't know it, some a lot of them do, but sometimes they don't. And they don't realize, oh, I really can do a lot of different things. And you can see the excitement in their eyes. And like realize there is a lot more potential. And so I think it's just a matter of activating that multi-potential that you have, multiple potentials that you have, and actually trying to follow suit with them and like kind of switching focus if you have to, but you don't have to focus on just one thing to be successful.
I strongly believe in that because honestly, the way that everybody reacts when you say that you want to do something else, when you're doing or when you're already pursuing something and you decide to also do something else or, you know, put your interest into something else, constantly people are like, oh, you know, they're lost or they don't know what they're doing with their lives or they are getting confused, you know, they're falling off the trail. And that's what most people thing. I just feel like, you know, there's so many things and interests that we can test it out. Who, you know, why, who and why tells us that we need to stick to this one thing and that's all we have to do?
Well, and who are they to tell you, if you wanted to get maybe a part-time job as a barista so you can learn how to make different coffees, you don't have to quit your main job to do that. You just have to work nights or something like that. Yeah.
But, you know, that just, the whole concept just seems very, like, you know, baffling to them that you don't make up your mind. That's what they call it, you know. And I think a lot of people think that way, too. You know, you choose something, you stick to it, and changing your mind or going off something else is wrong. And how did your friends and family react that when you were going to different fields?
Well, on paper, I've mainly just been a fitness expert. So like if you look at my resume, I've actually worked for half a dozen different employers in over a dozen different positions. So I've done a lot of different things. It looks like I've been kind of sporadic, but I've worked for the same main company for all of my work life. I've worked at the recreation center in my town. And I became a lifeguard, then a swim instructor, then a waterworks instructor, pool manager, fitness attendant, then personal trainer. So I did a lot of fitness related things, and I actually cut out a couple of those too. I did two more beyond that, but they were all related in that same little niche of fitness. And then people always said like, oh, you need to get a degree so you can actually leave that place. And it's like, what's funny is that I made more money per hour than a lot of the people who were telling me that. I just didn't work very many hours, because when you work in fitness, you work maybe a few hours a week, but you make almost double what other people make. So it's just interesting that people kept giving me that crap. But when it came to college, I knew as soon as I was, like, a senior in high school, I was like, I'm not going to go to college. Like, I still tried, still applied, I still looked around, but I was like, this is just not what I want to do. I don't want to be sitting there in school for another 4 years. And ironically, the schools that I did like were all master degree programs. Couldn't get into those. And then I looked at, I tried to find a job for smart city development. That's what I wanted to do in the long run, is work, help develop these smart cities around the world. And I looked around, there was no degree. Like, all around the world, there was no degree. Even in Singapore, which is a smart nation, or Barcelona, which is a smart city. At the time, there was no degrees for it. So you would have to get some advanced engineering degree and then maybe go civil engineering as well, or maybe something along the lines of just urban development. There was no actual smart city degree. And so I was like, okay, this is frustrating. Maybe I can go business. I don't know. And I just decided, screw it. I'm going to create my own. Like, I don't care what people think. I want to be able to follow the work I want to work in, because it's so new that it's not going to be there yet. But I know in the future it's going to be important. There's going to be that field. It's just not there yet. And so I decided to make my own, and that definitely gave some people like, okay, that's weird. Like, how do you prove it? And then I learned from Gary Vee the whole document over create mentality, where document your journey, then you're creating content from your documentation. You don't have to actually go and create something from scratch. And so Poly Innovator started out as kind of like a documentation process of me going through my modular degree that I created, my do-it-yourself degree. And eventually evolved more from that, especially since the whole idea from the beginning was this polymath of innovation. Well, what's a polymath? And how are you going to innovate? And what are you innovating? And eventually kind of evolved from there. But when people think about it, when people see what I do, they're like, what is a polymath? What is a poly innovator? And those are good questions to ask, but they don't seem to get the implications of it in the future.
I think that one of the things that I agree with you at everything, because definitely one of the I wasted 3 to almost 4 years of my life in university. And I think the worst decision anyone could make is going to school for business, because I know that a lot of people do say that, you know, oh, you should go, you know, everybody should go to school for business. You know, everybody should learn business. And I think that is the most stupidest thing I've ever heard. I spent like around 3 years in business school, and I honestly barely learned anything. And the way that people teach is so outdated. I feel like, you know, it's just so outdated. Like, I definitely learned that the hard way. And because, you know, everybody makes you believe, and, you know, university makes you believe that, you know, you need to be good at this one thing. And when I went to business, the one thing good about business that I would give it this one is that you can still choose what you want to do later on. So if you do a master's degree, then you can either go into sales, HR, marketing. That is with work experience, by the way. I learned more from an internship and from an online course than I did in my entire degree, which my parents paid way too much. And I'm not discouraging people.
Yeah, the point is, though, like, if you don't want to go to college, then don't. Like, that's what we're saying here. It's not that we're saying don't go to college, although maybe I kind of am at this point. I'm a little bit more of a rebel nowadays, especially since this has gotten worse and worse on the price-wise. But if you have a dream, yeah, if you have a dream that only college can do, like becoming a doctor or becoming a lawyer, where you literally have to go to college in order to be accepted into the bar or get your medical license, I get it. Go become a doctor. Go to school for it. But if you want to be a businessman, or you want to be a woman, or you want to be a digital marketer, oh my gosh, don't get me started on digital marketing. If you get a digital marketing degree, you are not a marketer. You know the old ways of marketing. Because by the time the information goes through the accreditation process, it's 3 years old. And all the information changes like every quarter. I've been on TikTok for 2 years, and it's changed every quarter. Like, the stuff you need to know has changed every quarter. That's just one platform. There's 20 different other ones out there. And they don't even teach you about blockchain platforms. And that's going to be a big deal here soon. Like, I don't know how quickly it is. I'm not a futurist. But I know that these platforms are going to go decentralized at some point, and they're going to be on the blockchain. And there's an alternative to YouTube, for example. There's alternatives to Twitter. And these platforms, they won't teach you in school. But if you experiment them with them now, that's the only way to do it.
I specialize in marketing, and they were teaching me about, you know, old school marketing, like putting up posters and, you know, and nothing. Like, they say, oh, you can advertise on internet, but let's not go into that, you know,
on the internet.
On the internet. And I graduated.
What does that even mean?
Exactly. And everyone was just so confused. Like, what are we learning at this point? Because marketing has evolved, like you mentioned, so much. And it's constantly changing every day. And I feel like, you know, new platforms are coming out. Like, now there's Clubhouse, which people are raving over.
Don't get me started on Clubhouse. No, don't get me started on that. So I told you before the call, I hate Apple products. And the reason why that relates to Clubhouse is Clubhouse is iOS only. And they're eventually going to do Android, but they still haven't even hired an Android developer from what I can tell by their careers page. And so, like, I looked at a careers page and they're still hiring an Android developer, so I think it's going to be a while. And the thing is, I think in a modern sense, if you launch an app, it's easy enough to do a cross-platform app. Like, there's so many different ways of cross-coding or creating. There's certain codes that literally go from any platform at once. And so you can just do progressive web app too and all that. And so it's one of those things where there's not really any excuse to not have an Android app at this point. In fact, there was an app that has significantly less funding last year called Voice Hub that literally did the exact same thing. They came first. They had Android and iOS, and they came first last summer. I was on there. It was the exact same feature set, and you get to record, whereas Clubhouse, you can't record as much, from what I hear at least. And 10 people now, most of them actually gave me their invite code too, no less, to go on Clubhouse, and I can't because I have no iOS devices or access to them. And that's why I'm so mad about it, because, like, I have the experience as an audio producer, creator. I can go on there and provide value, but I can't. And I think that by the time that they do it, they're going to have way too much competition. Facebook's doing an alternative. China's doing an alternative. Twitter's doing an alternative. And there's already a couple other ones like Spoon, Voice, and then Voice Hub, like I mentioned before, which they're kind of dead in the water, but they came already. And so there's a lot of alternatives out there, and it's getting really hyped up right now, but I think it's going to crash and burn. And that someone's going to make me eat my words when I say that, but I do think it's going to crash and burn.
I mean, everybody has their own, you know, assumptions on how an app's going to work out. So I don't think anybody should, like, you know, be like, haha, you said this. Because I feel like everything is constantly changing. Like, you know, how, for example, you know, Snapchat was the one who came up with stories first, and then Instagram came out, right. And then, you know, they thought that it's going to go downhill, but then it became more popular than Snapchat is right now. I know that in the US people use Snapchat a lot, but here where I am in Malaysia, and like a lot of
even here, it's like
I don't find the point of it, honestly. I used to be excited about it. It's all right, like, and it's just there.
Yeah, well. And some people are still sleeping on Snapchat. I do think there's, like, as a content creator, if you can post on Snapchat, that's great. Do it. But it's like, because I heard from somebody actually get paid for posting
Spotlight, on Spotlight, yes.
So you can actually just, like, cross-post. Yeah, yeah. And so, honestly, just kind of tossing some things in the Spotlight every once in a while is probably a good idea. But what's interesting is that Twitter has stories, the fleets. LinkedIn has stories, which are surprisingly doing decently well. TikTok will probably eventually have stories. And you know what has stories now too? Pinterest.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Story pins. Yeah. And so it's like everyone's doing stories. Actually, you know what? Yeah, even YouTube. You know what's funny? I actually just this week wrote a 7,000-word blog post on going omnichannel as a solo content creator. Yeah. Yeah, and so I just thought that was an important thing to note, is because, like, and maybe I can give you the link so you can put it in the description for people, but it's interesting because there's a whole section on stories, because they're definitely a growing medium, and Instagram definitely swept the rug underneath Snapchat there, because everyone goes on Instagram now for stories. But it is interesting, like, you shouldn't sleep on Snapchat, though, and you definitely shouldn't sleep on Twitter or LinkedIn stories, because those are growing platforms still. Twitter's still a viral platform if you can get on the front page, so to speak.
And do you feel like it's super stressful being so diversified? And, you know, I know for a fact that the one thing that I've learned in my marketing school is that you have to have a specific niche, and that's how businesses do well. And, you know, everybody says that. And even when I was starting up my podcast, people are like, you need to have a specific niche. You need to, although I did have an idea on what I wanted to do, but at the same time, I feel like I was getting advice from 50 different people, and they were all, but the one thing that they had in common is they said that you need to have a niche, and, you know, you have to stick to it, and, you know, you decide one and you stick to it, and that's the type of audience that you get. Do you sort of believe that, or, and has that been difficult for you doing what you do?
I call BS on that, because Yes, if you want to be successful, niche down. Sure, niche down, whatever you want to, however you want to say it. Niche down, focus. Great, be a specialist on that one area. You know why? Mainly because of SEO. Like, if you want your engine, your information to be concreted in these search engines, you need to have one thing so that Google knows what you're doing. Here's the deal. Google's also changing and evolving where they're starting to do more contextual-based searches. So if I search the purple elephant penguin, whatever that means, that's a very complex like search term. Like that's something that's very specific, but it's very unique. Like so if Google sees it now, it's gonna see like purple elephant and then the penguin. It's gonna see a separate words and it's gonna try to give you a matching based off of that. But if I'm looking for a purple elephant penguin specifically, that's a very unique context. Google is starting to learn the AI behind it and the systems behind it that like I mean that in that specific way. So in actuality, it's evolving, it's becoming more complex. You have the ability now to where you don't need a niche down. And if you look at all the biggest creators, Gary Vee, Neil Patel, Seth Godin, sure, in a way they niche down. Like Gary Vee started with wine, Neil Patel started with like SEO and blogging. Seth Godin just, I don't even know what he started, but he has like 8,000 blog posts now. So it's like, he certainly has more than one topic. Like, and it's like, if you look at all the biggest creators, they are not niching down. But they might have niched down to get started. And when I started out, it was mainly world unity concepts, which is kind of a broad topic, or self-development. That was like, it was kind of like my niche in a way for the United Thing Construct endeavor. And then for Poly Innovator, I started out with modular education. That became my niche, but it wasn't really a good niche. So Polymathy is like my anti-niche. I made a little micro polycast episode on this where I was like, it's my anti-niche, because Polymathy in itself is divergent, it's many different things. But as a topic, polymathy is a concept. Like, what is a polymath? Who are polymaths out there? Ada Lovelace is a great polymath example. Leonardo da Vinci, all these great people. That's a niche. That's a concept. That's something I can market. Like, hey, I'm like the one of the great polymath guys out there. Because there's many great men and women who are polymath creators. I've talked to a lot of them, and they're just fascinating to talk to. That is a niche. You know, it's a very small niche, so it's actually a blue ocean, if you will. But it is a niche nonetheless. But I use it as a baseline for future phases of Poly Innovator or future sub niches, if you will. Right now, the sub niche is education. The next one's going to be presumably exercise or gaming, whatever it may be. So you can start out with one. And that's why they always say, it's like the same advice what they said earlier about the 100 videos. All of them say, do 100 videos, do 100 pieces of content just so you can get the practice. Okay, I'm ranting. I'm going to stop there. But the point is, no. No, I don't think I have anything else to add. The point is though, like you don't have to have a niche technically, but maybe when you're starting out, do it. But if you feel like you want to talk about a lot of different things, you're gonna grow slower. That's okay. Do what you think is best.
A lot of different people have different things to say, and they kind of focus on the things that are popular right now. So if you know a certain topic is popular, or if a certain app is popular, they tend to focus on that thing. But quickly, when that dies down, they change their mind and they go on to the next one. You know, and I want to know your thoughts on TikTok because I know that it's still here, and it started off with Musical.ly for the people who don't know, and you know Musical.ly was, yes, Musical.ly was pretty, you know,
Oh,
it was a
geez.
thing back in like I think 2015 or 16, if I'm not sure, I'm not really sure on that, but I know there were a certain amount of content creators who were promoting Musical.ly, and you know it was that, you know, what people known it for, you know, the very dancing and the music. The lip syncing, yes. And like, you know, very the strategic movements, and I
Lip
think that was the
syncing,
main
mainly,
skill that people had back then. But now it has evolved to TikTok, which has so many different contents and areas, and people make different things, and you get to see what you're interested in based on your feed, your FYP page, your For You page, and that's very specific for you and what you're interested in. What are your thoughts on that?
Going back on the history, I would say you're right. It started out with one niche, and the reason why it wasn't successful is that it was successful. Musical.ly actually was moderately successful, but and then it was successful enough that TikTok actually thought about buying it, and they did. And so that's why it switched over. TikTok was already a thing over in China, stuff like that beforehand, and in other Asian countries I bet as well. But my knowledge of Musical.ly, I started back in 2018, I think, something like that, and maybe early 2019. And it was interesting because it was music-based stuff, but I still saw a generic content pool. It wasn't just lip singing or just dancing. There was some funny stuff, there were some skits, but very few and far between. And then once it switched over to TikTok, I remember that it definitely changed the vibe, but the apps felt the same when it comes to the actual user interface, and it just kept evolving. And it's hard to explain the evolution of it, but it's definitely gotten more comedic centric, a lot more skits, a lot more Star Wars, nerdy stuff. Like, I've met so many D&D nerds on there. I don't even like D&D. I don't even know why I'm on the D&D community. But a lot of the D&D nerds like Star Wars, or they like Star Trek, or Marvel, or Avatar The Last Airbender. And those are things I like. And so there's a lot of cross-pollination that way. And one thing I think I said this today on Twitter, or yesterday on Twitter. I made a prediction about TikTok, is that this is like, basically, you know the bell curve when it comes to popularity. There's the early adopters, like myself. I was on Musical.ly. I've been on TikTok now for like 2 years. I'm an early adopter, but I was mainly motivated by Gary Vee. He kept saying to go on there, and like, he was right. I'm glad I did. But the interesting thing was there's also the secondary early adopters, and that's the people who joined back in 2019, 2020. Because even 2020, it blew up. But it was already blowing up 3 times beforehand. I saw the blow up in 2019. It was almost just as big, I feel like, as 2020. But now we started getting more millennials this past year. And although I've seen millennials the whole time. The cool, interesting thing is, though, right now, just in the past like couple weeks, I've seen a huge, huge influx of celebrities, traditional celebrities, like movie actresses and actors and stuff like that come on. So now that we see the starting of the middle of the bell curve, like we're right at the beginning of the upward rise of that bell curve, and so if you want to still get in the first mover advantage, now is the time for that. And so that's one thing I'll say, is that we're starting to reach into the mass popularity aspect.
I know for a fact that TikTok is something that people can easily get lost over. Like, you can spend so much time without even knowing you're spending that much time.
It's tricky.
And I'm definitely guilty of that. I've been awake for hours at night, you know, when I should be sleeping, because of the fact that it's designed.
Curse you, TikTok.
It's so amazing how, you know, they kind of, I love the algorithm. That's one thing that I have to give them, that, you know, the way
it's really powerful, yeah.
they know exactly what you're interested in, and they show you content based on that. And that's, I feel like the design is just beautiful. And I was an initial hater, I'll give them that, because, you know, the way the what I was seeing on TikTok was very you know, what was like, you know, what was shown to me on Instagram was, you know, the dancings and the typical, you know, the very perfect people dancing, and people are like glorifying them, which I don't, you do you, you know, I'm completely,
yeah,
you know, that's
Charli D'Amelio, yes. And all that stuff.
And that's completely fine too, you know, if you want to do that. But for me, I like seeing content, you know, I like the comedic skits, and I like learning stuff. And for some reason, I've learned more on TikTok, like I mentioned, more than I've in, like, you know.
Exactly. No, I mean, I'm spinning around in my chair for those who are listening in. I'm like, this girl knows it. I was talking to someone actually last night about this, and she is a bit more old school. She was kind of like the Tumblr person, and Tumblr was like the place, like TikTok, where it was super popular, super hip. All the people who were in the know were on there. Now they're on TikTok, and there's always been Reddit too. All three of them were the place where information passes through first. If you want to know what's going to be popular on Instagram a month from now, go on TikTok. If you want to know what's going to be coming out on news, I've learned more news from TikTok that were actually real news, it wasn't like fake news, from TikTok than I have from any other website, even my local news channel. Like, I've learned about local news from my area from TikTok before I heard it on my local news channel.
And it's crazy how fast it travels. And I didn't know about Clubhouse before TikTok. I learned about Clubhouse on TikTok, and I learned about a lot of different hacks. Like, they like to say that, you know, things are like the right way of doing things or making your life easier on TikTok than I did anywhere before that. Even like things that I still use now, because they're so useful. It's crazy,
yeah,
how TikTok is this place where, even though, although it allows people to share, you know, there, you know, there are different types, and it depends on what you're interested in. That's one given thing. But, you know, it's just, I feel like it's an amazing place for people to view content. But it does, mm-hmm. Do you feel like it lacks the aspect of connecting with people?
I've made so many friends on TikTok. No, I met someone who literally met her future husband on TikTok. They got married because of TikTok. So no, I do not think there's a lack of connections on there. I made a friend in Canada that I still talk to on Snapchat, of all places, through TikTok. Like, that's the only platform I talk to her through by, is from TikTok. And from TikTok on Snapchat. That's the only reason why I actually use Snapchat anymore, is just because of that one friend, because I don't really talk to anybody else on there, besides one of my clients I talk to. That's it. And so it's like, yeah, there's actually one thing I want to mention too. There's a girl who I saw last July. I followed her back when she had less than 10K. Since July, she has grown exponentially. She started out by like making these really interesting faces. Like she carved out a niche, but now she's very, like, now if you look at her content, it's very diverse, very expanded, much more skits than she used to. She basically did some interesting faces when it came to music. And it was interesting because now Call Me Chris, who's the girl, has 20 million followers.
Oh, Call Me Chris, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, I love her.
20 million.
I love her.
I've seen her growth. I've seen her trajectory. I was kind of mad when she hit like 6 million. Like, I've been on here for 2 years, made over 1,000 videos. I don't have 2 million. But I can't even be mad about it because I have to respect the hustle. Like, I'm happy for her. It's so cool to see that. You know what I mean? From 10,000 all the way up to 20 million. That is insane. And she's not like Charli D'Amelio where she's like complaining about, I don't have enough followers. I've seen her, every milestone she's done, she seemed legitimately genuine. And it's like, okay, cool. Like, I know that, I guess like she's grown positively and she hasn't let it go to her head too. Maybe not Charli D'Amelio, I'm not talking bad about her. I'm just saying, like, Call Me Chris is very humble about it. And I think it's really cool.
Yeah, I love her. I like you, I've started watching her when she had like a few hundred thousand followers. And as much as social media has helped people, you know, give people a voice and spread their message, but I feel like it's still quite dangerous in a lot of factors because there are powerful people controlling these platforms. And, you know, especially with Facebook and everything that happened a few years ago with the whole, you know, data being leaked and everything. I feel recently, at least in Asia, there's, you know, people use WhatsApp like crazy. Everybody depends on WhatsApp. And they recently changed their terms and conditions, which kind of makes people feel like, you know, they were suddenly, everybody was freaking out about it. Because the terms and conditions were very similar to Facebook. And, you know, saying that, you know, people can, there is no end-to-end encryption kind of thing. So, you know, they can basically look into what you're sending people. And people started freaking out about it suddenly. Like, you know, they're like, oh my God, there's no privacy. We need to stop using WhatsApp. And I'm just like, you know, there has been no privacy for the past few years. You know, when you're using other social media platforms like Facebook, Messenger, Instagram, everything does...
Texting.
Everything basically takes your information away without, you know, it's maybe not that clear and they're not stating it to you, but it does happen. And people are suddenly now freaking out over it.
When it comes to, like, location tracking, like, I mean, there's a lot of reasons why an app would need to know location. And sometimes it literally is just trying to get you to the best tower, too. Like, when it comes to, like, my phone uses Google for its phone service and it's going to try to track the most closest tower. It needs to know your location for that. There's a lot of reasons why Facebook might want to know your location, because they might want to send you ads for a local pizza restaurant. Like, at one point, I don't know, this is so stupid, but I went to Facebook support and I was like, hey, can I get a feed that was just my Facebook ads? Like, all I want is all ads. Screw the content for my friends and family. I just want to see ads, because it was so contextualized to what I wanted to see. I cared more about the ads than I cared about the posts. Sorry, I use Newsfeed Eradicator now to get rid of all the posts, because it's like, I don't need to keep up with someone from high school having a baby, you know what I mean? But like, or getting married or something like that. Like, I don't want to be reminded that I'm not getting married. No, it's one of those things that, like, the ads were so contextualized. Like, it's a good thing. Like, yes, privacy is important, but I want to be able to have a good deal on the pizza that I'm going to get next week if I'm going to be eating pizza. You know what I mean? I'm saying that now, so people are worried that Google's going to hear it and then start sending you pizza ads, which has happened, but like, is that a bad thing? And like I mentioned before too, decentralized platforms, this is one of the reasons why there's still a privacy thing, but when it comes to decentralized platforms, there's no governing authority on that platform like YouTube is or Facebook is on those platforms. So I know a lot of people in the polymath space, for example, who use Facebook groups or LinkedIn groups or various kind of equivalents of that for their grouping of their tribe of polymaths. Problem is, what if Facebook decides tomorrow, you know what, we don't like groups, it's not really working out for us, we're going to shut down that feature. That's a very extreme thing, probably won't happen, but it could. They can literally do that tomorrow and be like, yeah, we're shutting down groups, sorry. And all these people who finally got united, people who want to connect with each other, maybe a sewing group or something like that, right? They're going to lose their ability to communicate with people. It's because of a centralized decision that happened. But there's these platforms, these blockchain-based platforms, that basically, once it's made, once it's built in that way, there's no central authority controlling it, changing those kind of things that dramatically.
And exactly, you know, they can just take it away whenever they want to. And people, I think there are a lot of features that Instagram had and they took it away or they focused on other things and people started freaking out over it. One thing that you mentioned is that you're against Apple products. And I want to know more on that.
Oh, no. So
I'm not hating.
First
I'm
off, I love Steve Jobs.
Curious because I have my love and hate relationship with Apple, so I want to know more.
I mean, I grew up with Microsoft for one. Like I had a Windows 95, a Windows 98, Windows XP, Windows 7 computers. Like I've had all of them. I had Windows 7, Windows 8, and Windows 10 phones. I have had every version of the Xbox. Like I've been a Microsoft diehard, and I have my love hate relationship with them too. I have Google phone, I use Google Drive, and I use Gmail, and so Google's my main one. So I've always had, like, my main tech companies not be Apple. I think that if I got into Apple quickly, like, early on, I mean, I probably would have liked them a lot more, because their cohesive ecosystem's really nice, that kind of thing. But I'm also a gamer, too, and Macs don't really do gaming. Sure, you can do Wine, but that's... You can do Wine, which is that Windows emulator, but, yeah, screw that. I don't like their products because they're too simple, and Apple's always been behind when it comes to tech. The 2016 iPhones, for example, they were so hyped up. Oh, this is revolutionary technology. It's super fast, super powerful. It's great. You know what happened? It's the same technology in that phone, the flagship iPhone, was from 2012 Android phones. Like, it was the exact same from 4 years prior. When it comes to features, that kind of thing, and then on top of that, too, I just never liked how they really approach things. I love that. I love Steve Jobs. Like, I think that he might have been difficult to work with, but he was a brilliant mind. He was polymathic. He's an inspiration. But when it comes to the company, I've never liked them as much. And I don't know. It's just hard to explain. And, like, I don't like iPods because I don't like Apple. And so I was like, I'm not going to call my show a podcast. I don't like that. Plus, polycast is much more aptly described anyways, a polymath polycast, because polymath, many different areas. Poly, meaning much or many in ancient Greek. And that's what it means. It's much or many. So many different series, many different topics, many different kinds of guests.
Thank you so much for joining me on the show. I think it's been a great chat. And, you know, I've learned a lot about social media. And I think the people who are listening have definitely learned more as well. And it was very interesting learning your thoughts on things. And you might be getting a lot of hate on Apple product users. So, you know.
That's fine. Come at me, guys. Let's go. Guys and gals.
But it was definitely a wonderful chat, and thank you so much for joining me. And do you have any final things to say?
Yeah, and so I host the Polymath Polycast, which is a show where I interview multidisciplinary people. I also have other series on there, such as my main series, the Omni Content, which is my content repurposing cycle, where I create a blog post, make it into a video, and turn that into a polycast, as well as my Fireside Micro Polycast, which is like a short form, little 3 to 9 minute clip of me talking about something. And then, as well as my blog, and you can find me at polyinnovator.space, and you can find me on any platform and yell at me about iOS products as much as you want at polyinnovator.
That's awesome, and I think you'll be definitely listening. You'll be receiving some hate on Apple product users, but I think it's fine. You know, they'll get over it. But it's been awesome having you, and thank you so much for joining me. And everybody should definitely check out your social media. And I've been following your LinkedIn, and you've been very active on there as well. And that's awesome. But yeah, thank you so much for joining me, and I'll see you all next week.